15, we'll read the same verses that we read this morning. Exodus 15, verses 22 through 27. So Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea. They, Moses and Israel, went out into the wilderness of Shur. And they went 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. When they came to Marah, they could not drink of the waters of Marah, for they were bitter. Therefore the name of it was called Marah. And the people murmured against Moses, saying, "What shall we drink?" And he cried unto the Lord, and the Lord showed him a tree, which when he had cast into the waters were made sweet. There he made them a statute and an ordinance, and there he proved them. And said, "If thou wilt diligently hearken to the voice of the Lord thy God, and will do that which is right in his sight, and will give ear to his commandments, and keep all his statutes, I will put none of these diseases upon thee, which I have brought upon the Egyptians, for I am the Lord that healeth thee." And they came to Elim, where were 12 wells of water, 70 palm trees, and they encamped there by the waters. Again, in chapter 14, Israel is delivered from Egyptian bondage, brought across the Red Sea. And this is a picture of Christ making a way through death for his people. It's also a picture of our personal experience of that. The children of Israel being victoriously brought across the Red Sea that day by the power of God was reality to them. It was something that literally happened to them. It was something that they could identify with at that particular moment. And again, such is a picture of our own salvation experience. Salvation is a reality. Salvation is something that literally happens to an individual. The entire 15th chapter contains invaluable information and lessons that will help us in living the saved life, the life that we are to live after we are saved. And that's what we want to speak on this evening, information and lessons regarding the saved life. And we see them throughout this 15th chapter. First of all, what they experienced at the Red Sea taught them the basic principles of living the saved life. And what you and I experienced at salvation taught us, if we would review it, teaches us the basic principles for living the saved life. It's like everything I needed to know I learned in kindergarten. There is some truth to that as far as basic principles. And that is also true regarding our salvation. The children of Israel on the other side of the Red Sea, that is after the Lord brought them across, is a picture of new life. They are now in a new position. They are somewhere they've never been before. They're no longer slaves. They are no longer in Egyptian territory. The Red Sea has rolled between them and their former lives, them and their former masters. And that is a basic principle of living the saved life. That is, living the life, the saved life, we must realize is a new life. It's not the old life, it's a new life. It's separated life. It's separated from the old life. We see we're always to be mindful that the saved life is a new life. And that's where people mess up. They think they can go back to their old life and still live the new life. It doesn't work that way. It's a new life. It is a separated life. In chapter 15, upon being miraculously brought across the Red Sea by God Himself, we see them lifting their hearts in praise to God. And in that song that they sang are invaluable truths, never to be forgotten. But sadly, they forgot them in 3 days. The truths that are revealed in this song are truths that are to be carried over into this new life. And it's truths that were revealed to us. We may not have known theologically what they were called, but they were truths that were revealed to us the very moment the Lord saved our souls. And those truths need to be carried over every day into our saved life, into our new life. First of all, in this song in Exodus 15, they sung unto God. They sang about God. In verse 1, we read twice that they sung unto the Lord. The saved life is unto the Lord. We're never to forget that. We also see, reading throughout the 15th chapter, the song was all about God. Very much unlike modern hymns today. This song is all about God. The word Lord occurs 14 times in this song. The pronouns referring to the Lord, there's 33 of them. So that's a total of 47 times where there's direct reference to God. The word hath, in reference to God, in reference to the activity of the Lord, occurs 6 times. So it is a song all about God. It is a song about what God had done. And living the saved life, it's all unto Him. It's all about Him. That's something we must never, ever forget. They forgot it in 3 days. Most, it doesn't take that long. We see as you read through the song, they sang about the sovereignty of God. In verse 3, we read, "The Lord is His name. Jehovah is His name." He is Jehovah. The realization of such is key to living the life of the saved. They sang in verse 6 that He is glorious in power. They sang in verse 7 of the greatness of Thine excellency. They sang in verse 11 that He was glorious in holiness. They are singing about the sovereignty of God. You and I knew nothing as far as theologically about the sovereignty of God. We did not know what it was called. But the moment God saved us, we were taught that God is sovereign. The remembrance of His glory, the remembrance of His sovereignty is vital to living the saved life. They sang of His power. They sang of His authority over the enemy. Notice in verse 1, "He hath triumphed gloriously." He hath triumphed gloriously. Verse 4, Pharaoh's chariots and his host hath he cast into the sea. His chosen captains also are drowned in the Red Sea. The depths have covered them. They sank into the bottom as a stone. Thy right hand, O Lord, is become glorious in power. Thy right hand, O Lord, hath dashed in pieces the enemy, and the greatness of thy excellency has overthrown them. They're singing about the power and authority over God, over the enemy. In verses 9 and verse 10, the enemy said, I will pursue, I will overtake, I will divide the spoil. My lust shall be satisfied upon them. I will draw my sword and my hand shall destroy them. Thou didst blow with thy wind, the sea covered them, they sank as lead in the mighty waters. Once again, they're singing about God's power, God's authority over the enemy. Verse 12, thou stretchest out thy right hand, the earth swallowed them. They also sang about his power and authority over insurmountable obstacles. We read in verse 19, but the children of Israel went on dry land into the midst of the sea. The remembrance that he is greater than the enemy is vital to living the saved life. When God saved your soul, you did not know that it was called sovereignty, but you knew that God was greater than your enemy. God was greater than your sin. Every saved person was taught that at salvation. He's also greater. It's vital to living the Christian life to know that he's greater than any obstacle that you and I may ever encounter. They sang of the miraculous power of God. In verse 11, they said, doing wonders. The remembrance that he is a wonder-working God is vital to the saved life. We forget these things. These are basic principles that we learned at salvation. These principles Israel learned when they crossed the Red Sea. But we have a tendency to forget, but these things must be carried over into the life in which we're called to live. They sang about his mercy and his faithful guidance. In verse 13, thou in thy mercy hast led forth the people which thou hast redeemed. Thou hast guided them in thy strength unto thy holy habitation. The realization of his mercy is vital to living the Christian life. The realization of his faithful guidance is absolutely vital. You see, in crossing the Red Sea, the children of Israel were entirely dependent upon God that day. When the Lord saved our soul, we were entirely dependent, entirely submissive to him, as they were that day. And again, that must be carried over into the lives that God has called us to live. They sang of his relevance to their lives. In verse 2, the Lord is my strength and song. He has become my salvation. He is my God. That's all declaring that God was relevant to them. That is also absolutely essential to living the saved life. They also sang of their desire to exalt him. In verse 2, they say, I will exalt him. And the very moment that God saved our souls, we had a desire to exalt God. I don't believe God has ever saved anyone that they did not immediately have a desire to exalt God. Somewhere along the line, they may lose that desire. But the moment God saved your soul, you had a desire to exalt the Lord. And that must continue to be our motivation if we're going to live this life that we're called to live. So there on the banks of the Red Sea, after being led across, joy unspeakable fills their hearts. Blessed assurance that only God can give thrilled their souls. And think about what they witnessed that day. They witnessed the promises of God. They witnessed the provision of God, the presence of God, the power of God, and the protection of God. And if we could just keep those things in our mind, we must carry over the promises of God, the provision of God, the presence of God, the power of God, the protection of God. We keep those things always on our mind. Amen. We'll be able to live this life that we're called to live. But we have a tendency to forget these things. So first, number one, I have 10 points, but number one, there were a lot of sub-points under number one. Number one is we learn basic principles at salvation that must be carried over. Secondly, as we mentioned this morning, there is some information here as to the place where this life is lived. Verse 22, it is lived in the wilderness. It's not lived in a rose garden. It's not lived in a mansion. It's not lived in a castle. It's lived in a wilderness. Those who have been brought out of Egyptian bondage, they have been brought victoriously through death. Their hearts are full of praise. They have a determination to live for God. And immediately, they find themselves in the wilderness. They go from the banks of the Red Sea to a wilderness. And no doubt the day, the moment they went out into that wilderness, there was a joy that overflowed their soul. But the wilderness has a way of zapping your joy. But when they first headed out into that wilderness, because all of these things were fresh on their mind, there was a joy. And there was great anticipation as they entered into that wilderness. And again, this is where we live. And they weren't in the wilderness long, not even 3 days. And they found that there was no water in this place. One of the first lessons we learn as a child of God, one that we must always carry over into our everyday life, is there is absolutely nothing down here which can minister to the spiritual life that we received from Christ. This is why so many fail. They think that there's something in this world that's going to minister to their new life. There's nothing. There's no water here. One of the first lessons we learn. Thirdly, there's some information as to places of trial, which we spent much time on this morning. And when they came to Marah, verse 23, this was a place of disappointment. This was a place of frustration and distress. But you see, during that 3 days, they were already beginning to forget the things that they had seen, the things that they had witnessed at the Red Sea were beginning to fade in their minds. And by the time they got to Marah, they'd forgotten all about them. But this was a place of uncertainty and fear. There was water there, but they could not drink of the waters of Marah, for they were bitter. And that's another thing we learn, is that the poison of sin has touched everything in this world. There isn't anything in this world that is not touched by the poison of sin. And here they are, they're brought face to face with a dangerous, and a threatening situation. They needed water. but they couldn't drink of the waters of Marah. In the span of 3 days, they are brought from the glorious shores of the Red Sea to the bitter and undrinkable waters of Marah. And what we learn is something we must always remember, how quickly and unexpectedly trials come upon us. 3 days, a long time, many times. Sometimes it's just a matter of seconds, a matter of minutes, where we go from the Red Sea to Marah. But there are going to be trials. If you think for a moment, if I do everything right, first of all, that's not going to happen. But let's say it were possible. You do everything right, everything's going to turn out right, and I'll have nothing but joy in my life. That's a prosperity gospel. That's nowhere to be found in the Word of God. In fact, just the opposite is true. You might as well settle in your mind the very moment the Lord saves your soul, there are going to be some Marahs. And your life is not going to always bypass Marah. There are going to be some times that you're going to have to spend some time in Marah. But if you can remember what you learned at the Red Sea, it'll help you in Marah. But most don't remember. Fourthly, there is information concerning the fact that there was still a great deal of Egypt in these Israelites. Verse 24, and the people murmured against Moses. Though the Red Sea has rolled between them and their former life and their former masters, though they have been gloriously and miraculously delivered from Egyptian bondage, there's still an awful lot of sin in them. There's still an awful lot of Egyptian characteristics within them. We are reminded that every day in our own lives. Yes, we have been brought from Egypt, but there's still an awful lot of Egypt in us. There's still an awful lot of Egyptian characteristics within us. We need to remember that, because that's what causes us to depend upon the Lord and watch and examine ourselves. Fifthly, there is information here concerning our fickleness and our proneness to fail. Verse 24 again, and the people murmured against Moses. I know it's hard to believe, but it's true. They murmured against Moses. The same people who 3 days ago were absolutely enthralled with God. 3 days ago, they lifted their hearts and praised to God. 3 days ago, as you listened to their song, they possessed great faith in God. 3 days ago, they were deeply in love with the Lord. And they were determined for God. But in a span of 3 days, it is as if the Red Sea experience never happened. It's as if it never happened. Oh, how fickle. In the span of 3 days, their faith has evaporated. They said in verse 6 and verse 7, that the Lord is glorious in power, and in the greatness of thine excellency hast thou overthrown them. But hear them now at Marah. What shall we drink? What shall we drink? In those words, there's not a trace of faith. Faith is gone. In 3 days, they have witnessed one of the greatest miracles ever. And in 3 days, faith is gone. As you go to Marah, you see them there before the bitter waters. You can hear it shouted in different tones by men, women, and children. What shall we drink? Some perhaps said it in the tone of fear. Some said it in the tone of confusion. Some most said it in a tone of anger, because it says they murmured against Moses. This was a tone of anger. It all comes to the same thing, whatever their tone was. We had hoped to quench our thirst here, but we can't drink this water. What shall we drink? You see, the problem was they placed their hope in the world. And now they're upset with God. They had just witnessed God part the Red Sea. And now they act as if God can't fill their canteens with water. Faith is gone. They had just witnessed a marvelous display of God's miraculous power. And now they act as if God can't do anything. 3 days is all it took. And for most of us, it doesn't take that long. They had just witnessed God making a way for them through the midst of the insurmountable obstacle of the Red Sea. And now they act as if God can't make a way. In the span of 3 days, they have forgotten, and faith is gone. Most of us have been saved for decades, and oh, how much we've forgotten about our salvation experience. Well, how do you know we've forgotten? It's obvious from our lives. We're to carry these principles over into our lives. They had sung in verse 2, "He is my God. I will prepare Him a habitation." But in the span of 3 days, love for God has grown cold. They said in verse 2, "I will exalt Him." But again, in the span of 3 days, that determination is gone. In verse 2, they sang, "The Lord is my strength and my song, and He's become my salvation. He is my God." But in the span of 3 days, they no longer see God as relevant to their situation. And they are shouting, "What shall we drink?" In verse 11, they had sung of the wonders of God. But in the span of 3 days, they have forgotten all about the wonders of the Lord. Look at our lives. Through the years of our lives, we have experienced wonder after wonder, wonder upon wonder. But we come to Marah and we have forgotten all about it. Oh, how fickle God's people are. They had sung of His mercy and guidance. In 3 days, they've forgotten all about it. In the span of 3 days, they're ready to quit God. They're ready to quit on the Lord. You know, a lot of times, people criticize Israel, and there's much to criticize, but it's like looking in a mirror. It's us. It's us. It's who we are. That's why God put it here. We need to be aware of our fickleness. We need to be aware of our proneness to fail God, because it's then that we'll cry out to God for Him to help us and to deliver us from such. Again, it don't take 3 days now. It can be a matter of seconds. The mood swings in people today are unbelievable. I mean, it'll drive you absolutely nuts to try to keep up with just the mood swing of a person in a church service. We're fickle. There is instruction also as to whom we are to seek if we're going to live this life. There at Mara, while the people were murmuring, we read concerning Moses, and he cried unto the Lord. He didn't try to defend himself. He didn't argue with them. He cried unto the Lord. They are murmuring. They're looking for answers in their murmuring. Moses did not sink to their level. He did not sink to the level of those around him. And if we're going to serve God, if we're going to live this life, we can't sink to the level of everyone around us. They might be murmuring. They might be complaining. And it's easy to join in. The thing that takes grace is when all of that is going on, for somebody to cry unto God. And that's what Moses did. So we learn here to whom we are to seek. Moses rose above what was going on around him. And he looked to God. He didn't look to anyone else. It says that he cried unto the Lord. He was depending upon God. Why was he depending upon God? Because unlike the people, he realized God and God alone could provide what they needed at Mara. And if we're going to live this life, we have to realize that God and God alone is able to provide what we so desperately need. Did not we learn that in our salvation experience? Did not Israel learn that at the Red Sea? Certainly they did. But we forget. We forget. You see, people say, well, it's a sin not to cry unto God. It's a sin not to pray. That is true. But what sin is there that causes you not to pray? That's the root of the problem. And that is the realization that God and God alone can meet your needs. Because I guarantee you, when you realize that only God can meet your needs, guess who you're going to cry to? You're going to cry to Him. And the fact that we don't just shows that we don't realize that God and God alone. But it's the only way to live this life. Is to realize, go through every day realizing God and God alone can meet my needs. There is instruction also concerning how to know what you need to know in your circumstances. Again, verse 25, and he cried unto the Lord, and the Lord showed him a tree. The only one. It does not say, and the Lord showed them. That's not what it says. It says the Lord showed him. The Lord showed him a tree. Why doesn't it say them? Because he didn't show it to them. He showed it to him. Why did he show it to him and not them? Because he cried unto the Lord. The only one who was shown the remedy. The only one who was instructed what to do was the one who cried unto the Lord. All the murmuring of the people did not make the situation better. Did all their murmuring make Myra a better place? No. Did it fix anything? Didn't fix a thing. Did it make their situation better? No, it made it worse. When you murmur, it just adds to your torment. They added to their torment. Did they become wiser in their murmuring? No, God didn't show them anything. But Moses cried to the Lord, and God showed him. And we are going to have Myras. And when we're in Myra, or anywhere else as far as that goes, but when we're in Myra, there's some things we need to know. And only God can show it to us. So we need to pray. Need to pray. Oh, Moses could have listened. I'm sure there were a lot of ideas floating around in all that murmuring. But the Lord showed him a tree. This is a lesson, again, that must be carried out, carried all through our life. The way to know what we need to know in whatever our circumstance is to cry unto God. And people today are so impatient. Well, I tried that and he didn't answer me. In other words, I prayed for 30 seconds and he didn't show me right away, so I've gone into something else. You keep crying unto God till he does answer. Because he's the only one that can show you. So you just keep crying unto him. There is also information concerning the Lord's ability to bring about transformation. The waters were made sweet. Never lose sight of the fact that it is God who's in the transforming business. I'm not, you're not, no one else is. God is in the transforming business. God knows how, and God can. Never lose sight of those two truths. God knows and God can. We need to carry that through every situation of our life. There's also here information that places of trial are proving grounds. Again, the last part of verse 25, and he proved them, and there he proved them. It was a testing ground. Trials and adverse circumstances is not something you and I choose. If we're given the choice, Elam, 12 wells of water, 70 palm trees, or Mara, where there's poison water, what are we going to choose? We're going to choose Elam every time. We're always going to choose Elam. We prefer Elam over Mara any day. We prefer things to go what we consider well than things to be adverse. That's true of all of us. We'd rather have joy than sorrow. We'd rather have health than disease. That's true of all of us. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. But trials and adverse circumstances show what we are. That's what shows us what we are. It shows us where we are. And if we show up in Myra, and the first thing we do is murmur, that speaks volumes. That speaks volumes of where we are. And they wanted to blame Moses for Myra. That's our nature. Something doesn't go right, there's somebody to blame. Because if we can blame someone else, that relieves us of responsibility and just makes us feel better. Myra is a place where we are tried, a place where we are proven. And what we learn at Myra about ourselves we need to carry over to the rest of our lives. And then lastly, there's information concerning the great variety of the saved life. In verse 27, they came to Elim, where there were 12 wells of water and 70 palm trees, and they encamped there by the waters. May I say that God is the same, whether you're in Myra or whether you're in Elim. God is the same whether you're on the shores of the Red Sea or Myra or Elim. God is the same. God is who He is. But we see God is the same when our hearts are lifted with praise, as theirs were on the shores of the Red Sea, or whether we're in a place of no water, or whether we're in a place of bitter water, or whether we're in a place of an abundance of water and shade. God's the same. That's a very simple truth, and it's one that we'll all nod our heads to in affirmation. Yes, we know that, we know that, we know that, but do we? Do we really, truly know that? That God is the same no matter where we are. And God is good no matter what's going on. Something happens that we consider great in our life. God has provided. God has worked a miracle. And we say, God is so good. And that's true. But I'll be honest, there's not too many times I'm at Mara and I'm saying, God is so good. But He is. He's just as good at Mara as He is at Elim. He's just as good in the birthing room as He is at the funeral home. Same God. And we need to remember that. We need to always remember that. That truth got a hold of the psalmist David when he said, surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. The days of our life may include Mara, may include Elim. But God's goodness and mercy is there every day. And that's just a basic truth that we need to always keep with us. So really, if we just go back to our salvation experience, just as the Israelites in the Red Sea experience, there's a lot of principles that we were taught that day that if we could just carry over into our saved life. And you know what? The day God saved us, up to that point, we didn't have a theology class. We didn't have any of that stuff. But the day God saved us, we were theologically, we were pretty sound. Because that day it was all about Him. And I'm here to tell you, if it's all about Him, that you can't get much more sound than that. It's all about Him. And we need to carry that principle over into our lives. And how much better our lives would be if we would just remember these things. And if you read on there in Exodus 16, you see they went from Elim back into the wilderness of sin. And in a little while, they're doing what? They're doing the same thing they did at Mara. They're murmuring. They're complaining. Because there's no bread. So you just go from one spot to the other. And that pretty much sums up our life. But all may we glorify God. Wherever, whatever places we have to go through, that we would glorify God in them all. That we realize that He's the same no matter where we are. And He hasn't lost track of us no matter where we are. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in singing.